Chubby was not a happy dragon. He missed the forge. He'd quite liked it in the forge. He got all the coal he could eat, and the blacksmith hadn't been a particularly unkind man. Chubby had not demanded much out of life, and had got it. Then this large woman had taken him away and put him in a pen. There had been other dragons around. Chubby didn't particularly like other dragons, and people had given him unfamiliar coal. He'd been quite pleased when someone had taken him out of the pen in the middle of the night. He'd thought he was going back to the blacksmith. Now it was dawning on him that this was not happening. He was in a box. He was being bumped around, and now he was getting angry. Sergeant Cullen fanned himself with his clipboard, and then glared at the assembled guards. He coughed. "Right then, people," he said. "Settle down." "We are settled down, Fred," said Corporal Nobbs. "That's Sergeant to you, Nobby," said Sergeant Cullen. "What do we have to sit down for, anyway? We didn't used to do all this. I feel right burk sitting down listening to you going on about..." "We got to do it proper. Now there's more of us," said Sergeant Cullen. "Right, ahem, right. Okay. Well, we welcome to the guard today Lance Constable Detritus..." "Don't salute!" "...and Lance Constable Cuddy, also Lance Constable Angua. We hope you will have a long and..." "What's that you've got there, Cuddy?" "What?" said Cuddy innocently. "I can't help noticing that you still has got there what appears to be a double-headed throwing axe, Lance Constable." "Despite what I vouchsafed to you earlier, RE guard rules." "Cultural weapon, Sergeant," said Cuddy hopefully. "You can leave it in your locker. Guards carry one sword, short, and one truncheon. With the exception of Detritus," he added mentally. "Firstly, because even the longest sword nestled in the troll's huge hand... like a toothpick. And secondly, because until they got this saluting business sorted out, he wasn't about to see a member of the watch nail his own head to his own ear. His own hand to his own ear. He'd have a truncheon and like it. Even then, he'd probably beat himself to death. Dwarfs and trolls. He didn't deserve it. Not at a time of at his time of life. And that wasn't the worst of it." He coughed again. When he read from his clipboard, it was in the sing-song voice of someone who learned his public speaking at school. "Right," he said again, a little uncertainly. "So, says here, Sergeant, now what?" "Oh, it's you, Corporal Carrot." "Yes." "Aren't you forgetting something, Sergeant?" said Carrot. "I dunno," said Cullen cautiously. "Am I?" "About the recruits, Sarge. Something they've got to take," Carrot prompted. Sergeant Cullen rubbed his nose. "Let's see. They'd had, as per standing orders, taken and signed for one shirt, mail, chain, one helmet, iron, and copper, one breastplate, iron, except in the case of Lance Constable Angua, who'd need to be fitted special, and Lance Constable Detritus, who'd signed for a hastily adapted piece of armor which had once belonged to a war elephant, one truncheon, oak, one emergency pike or halberd, one crossbow, one hourglass, one short sword, except for Lance Constable Detritus, and one badge, Office of Night Watchman's Copper." "I think they've got the lot, Carrot," he said. All signed for. Detritus got someone to make an X for him. They've got to take the oath, Sarge. Have they?" "Yes, Sarge, it's the law." Sergeant Cullen looked embarrassed. It probably was the law, as at that. Carrot was much better at this sort of thing. He knew the laws of Ankh-Morpork Pork by heart. He was the only person who did. All Cullen knew was that he'd never taken an oath when he joined, and as for Nobby, the best he'd ever get to an oath was something like, "Bugger this for a game of soldiers." "All right, then," he said. You've all got to take the oath, and Corporal Carrot will show you how. Did you take the oath when you joined us, Carrot? Oh, yes, Sarge. Only no one asked me, so I gave it to myself, quiet-like. Oh? Right. Carry on, then. Carrot stood up and removed his helmet. He smoothed down his hair. Then he raised his right hand. Raise your right hands, too, he said. That's the one nearest Lance Constable Angua, Lance Constable Detritus. And repeat after me. He closed his eyes, and his lips moved for a moment, as though he was reading something off the inside of his skull. I, comma, square bracket, recruit's name, square bracket, comma. He nodded at them. You say it. They chorused. A reply. Angua tried not to laugh. Do solemnly swear by square bracket recruit's deity of choice, square bracket. Angua couldn't trust herself to look at Carrot's face. To uphold the laws and ordinances of the city of Ankh-Morpork, serve the public trust, comma, and defend the subjects of his stroke, her bracket, delete whichever is inappropriate, bracket, majesty, bracket, name of reigning monarch, bracket. Angua tried to look at a point behind Carrot's ear. On top of everything else, Detritus's patient monotone was already several dozen words behind everyone else. Without fear, comma, favor, comma, or thought of personal safety, semicolon, to pursue evildoers and protect the innocent, comma, laying down my life, if necessary, in the cause of said duty, comma, so help me, bracket, aforesaid deity, bracket, full stop, gods. Say, God save the king, stroke, queen, bracket, delete whichever is inappropriate, bracket, full stop. Angua subsided gratefully, and then did see Kara's face. There were unmistakable tears trickling down his cheek. Right, that's it, then. Thank you, said Sergeant Cullen after a while. Protect the innocent, comma, in your own time, Lance Constable Detritus. The sergeant cleared his throat and consulted the clipboard again. Now, Grabber Hoskins has been let out of jail again. So be on the lookout. You know what he's like when he's had his celebratory drink. And Bloody Coalface the Troll beat up four men last night. In the cause of said duty, comma. Where's Captain Vimes? Demanded Nobby. He should be doing this. Captain Vimes is sorting things out, said Sergeant Cullen. It's not easy, learning civilianing, right? Right. He glanced at his clipboard again, and back to the guardsmen. Men. Huh. His lips moved as he counted. There, sitting between Nobby and Constable Cuddy, was a very small, raggedy man whose beard and hair were so overgrown and matted together that he looked like a ferret peering out of a bush. Me, bracket, aforesaid deity, bracket, full stop. Oh, no, he said. What are you doing here and now? Thank you, Detritus. Don't salute. You can sit down now. Mr. Carrot brings me in, said here and now. Protective custody, Sarge, said Carrot. Again? Cullen unhooked the cell keys from their nail over the desk and tossed them to the thief. All right, cell 3. Take the keys in with you. You will holler if we need him back. You're tough, Mr. Cullen, said here and now, wandering down the steps to the cells. Cullen shook his head. Worst thief in the world, he said. He doesn't look that good, said Angua. No, I mean the worst, said Cullen, as in not good at it. Remember, when he was going to go all the way up to Dunmanifestin to steal the secret of fire from the gods, said Nobby. And I said, but we've got it, here and now. We've had it for thousands of years, said Carrot. And he said, that's right, so it has antique value. Poor old chap, said Sergeant Cullen. Okay, what else have we got? Yes, Carrot? Now, they've got to take the king's shilling, said Carrot. Oh, right, yes, okay. Colin fished in his pocket and took out 3 sequin-sized Ankh-Morpork dollars, which had about the gold content of seawater. He tossed them one at a time to the recruits. "This is called the King's Shilling," he said, glancing at Carrot. "Don't know why. You gotta give it when you join. Regulations, see. Shows you've joined." He looked embarrassed for a moment and then coughed. "Right. Oh, yeah. Load a rogue some trolls." He corrected himself. "Got some kind of march down Short Street. Lance Constable Tritus. Don't let him salute." "Right. What's this about, then?" "It's Troll New Year," said Detritus. "Is it? Suppose we got to learn about this sort of thing now. And says here there's this dwarf rally or something." "Battle of Coon Valley Day," said Constable Cuddy. "Famous victory over the trolls." He looked smug, insofar as anything could be seen about the beard. "Yeah?" Behind the beard. "Yeah? From ambush," grunted Detritus, glowering at the dwarf. "What? It was the trolls," Cuddy began. "Shut up," said Colin. "Look, it says here. Says here they're marching. Says here they're marching up Short Street." He turned the paper over. "Is this right?" "Trolls going one way, dwarfs going the other," said Carrot. "Now there's a parade you don't want to miss," said Nobby. "What's wrong?" said Angua. Carrot waved his hands vaguely in the air. "Oh dear, it's going to be dreadful. We must do something. Dwarves and trolls get along like a house on fire," said Nobby. "You ever been to a burning house, miss?" Sergeant Colin, normally red-faced, had gone pale pink. He buckled on his sword belt and picked up his truncheon. "Remember," he said, "let's be careful out there." "Yeah," said Nobby. "Let's be careful to stay in here." To understand why dwarfs and trolls don't like each other, you'd have to go back a long way. They get along like chalk and cheese. Very like chalk and cheese, really. One is organic, the other isn't, and also smells a bit cheesy. Dwarfs make a living by smashing up rocks with valuable minerals in them. And the silicone-based life form known as the trolls are basically rocks with valuable minerals in them. In the wild, they also spend most of the daylight hours dormant, and that's not a situation a rock containing valuable minerals needs to be in when there are dwarfs around. And dwarfs hate trolls because after you've just found an interesting seam of valuable minerals, you don't like rocks that suddenly stand up and tear your arm off because you've just stuck a pickaxe in their ear. It was a state of permanent interspecies vendetta, and, like all good vendettas, didn't really need a reason anymore. It was enough that it had always existed. Dwarfs hated trolls because trolls hated dwarfs, and vice versa. The watch lurked in Three Lamps Alley. Which was about halfway down Short Street. There was a distant crackle of fireworks. Dwarfs let them off to drive away evil mind spirits. Trolls let them off because they tasted nice. "Don't see why we can't let them fight it out amongst themselves and then arrest the losers," said Corporal Knobs. "That's what we used to do. The patrician gets really shirty about ethnic trouble," said Sergeant Colin moodily. "He gets really sarcastic about it." A thought struck him. He brightened up a little bit. "Got any ideas, Carrot?" he said. A second thought struck him. Carrot was a simple lad. "Corporal Carrot? Sarge? Sort this lot out, will you?" Carrot peered around the corner at the advancing wall of trolls and dwarfs. They had already seen each other. "Right, you are, Sergeant," he said. "Lance Constable Cuddy and Detritus. Don't salute. You come with me." "You can't let him go out there," said Angua. "It's certain death. Got a real sense of duty, that boy," said Corporal Knobs. He took a minute length of dogkind from behind his ear and struck a match on the sole of his boot. "Don't worry, miss," said Colin. "He, Lance Constable," said Angua. What? Lance Constable, she repeated. Not miss. Carrot says I don't have any sex while I'm on duty. To the background of Nobby's frantic coughing, Colin said very quickly, what I mean is, Lance Constable, young Carrot's got charisma. Bags of charisma. Charisma? Bags of it. The jolting and had stopped. Chubby was really annoyed now. Really, really annoyed. There was a rustling noise. A piece of sacking moved aside, and there, staring at Chubby, was another male dragon. It looked annoyed. Chubby reacted in the only way he knew how. Carrot stood in the middle of the street, arms folded, while the two new recruits stood just behind him, trying to keep an eye on both approaching marches at the same time. Colin thought Carrot was simple. Carrot often struck people as simple, and he was. Where people went wrong was thinking that simple meant the same thing as stupid. Carrot was not stupid. He was direct, and honest, and good-natured, and honorable in all his dealings. In Ankh-Morpork, this would normally have added up to stupid, in any case, and would have given him the survival quotient of a jellyfish, and a blast furnace. But there was a couple of other factors. One was a punch that even trolls had learned to respect. The other was that Carrot was genuinely, almost supernaturally likable. He got on well with people, even while arresting them. He had an exceptional memory for names. For most of his young life, he'd lived in a small dwarf colony where there were hardly any other people to know. Then, suddenly, he was in a huge city, and it was as if a talent had been waiting to unfold, and was still unfolding. He waved cheerfully at the approaching dwarfs. Morning, Mr. Cumblethigh. Morning, Mr. Strong in the Arm. Then he turned and waved at the leading troll. There was a muffled pop as a firework went off. Morning, Mr. Boxite. He cupped his hands. If you could all just stop and listen to me, he bellowed. The two marches did stop, which, with some hesitation and a gentle piling up of the people in the back. It was that or walk over Carrot. If Carrot did have a minor fault, it lay in not paying attention to small details around him when his mind was on other things. So the whisper conversation behind his back was certainly escaping him. Ha! It was too an ambush. And your mother was an or... Now then, gentlemen, said Carrot in a reasoned and amiable voice. I'm sure there's no need for this belligerent manner. You ambush us, too. My great-great-grandfather, he at Coombe Valley, he tell me, in our fair city, on such a lovely day, I must ask you, as good citizens of Ankh-Morpork, yeah? You even know who your father is, do you? That while you must certainly celebrate your proud ethnic folkways, to profit by the example of my fellow officers here, who have sunk their ancient differences, I smash your head, you roguesome dwarfs, for the greater benefit of, I could take you with one hand and tie behind my back, the city whose badge they are. You get opportunity, I tie both hands behind you back, proud and privileged to wear. Ark, ow! It dawned on Carrot that hardly anyone was paying any attention to him. He turned. Lance Constable Cuddy was upside down because Lance Constable Detritus was trying to bounce him on the cobbles by his helmet. Although Lance Constable Cuddy was putting the position to good effect by gripping Lance Constable Detritus around the knee and trying to sink his teeth into Lance Constable Detritus's ankle. The opposing marchers watched in fascination. We should do something, said Angua, from the guard's hiding place in the alley. Well, said Sergeant Colin Sully, it's always very tricky, ethnic. You can put a foot wrong very easily, said Nobby. Very thin-skinned, you're basic ethnic. Thin-skinned, they're trying to kill one another. It's cultural, said Sergeant Colin miserably. No sense us trying to force our culture on him, is there? That's speciesist. Out in the street, Corporal Carrot had gone very red in the face.
If he lays a finger on either of them, with all their friends watching, said Nami, the plan is we run away like hell. Veins stood out on Carrot's mighty neck. He stuck his hands on his waist and bellowed, Lance Constable Detritus! Salute! They'd spent hours trying to teach him. Detritus's brain took some time to latch on to an idea. But once it was there, it didn't fade away fast. He saluted. His hand was full of dwarf. So he saluted while holding Lance Constable Cuddy, swinging him up and over like a small angry club. The sound of their helmets meeting echoed off the buildings, and it was followed a moment later by the crash of them both hitting the ground. Carrot prodded them with the toe of his sandal. Then he turned and strode toward the dwarf marcher, shaking in anger. In the alleyway, Sergeant Cullen started to suck the rim off of his helmet out of terror. You've got weapons, have you? Snarled Carrot at a hundred dwarfs. Own up. If the dwarfs who've got weapons don't drop them this minute, the entire parade, and I mean the entire parade, will be put in the cells. I'm serious about this. The dwarfs in the front row took a step backward. There was a desultory tinkle of metallic objects hitting the ground. All of them, said Carrot menacingly. That includes you with the black beard trying to hide behind Mr. Hamslinger. I can see you, Mr. Strong in the Arm. Put it down. No one's amused. He's going to die, isn't he? Said Angua quietly. Funny that, said Nobby. If we was to try it, we'd be little bits of mince. But it seems to work for him. Charisma, said Sergeant Cullen, who was having to lean on the wall. Do you mean charisma? Said Angua. Yeah, one of them things, yeah. How does he manage it? Dunno, said Nobby. Suppose he's an easy lad to like. Carrot had turned to the trolls, who were smirking at the dwarf's discomfiture. And as for you, he said, I shall definitely be patrolling around Quarry Lane tonight. I won't be seeing any trouble, will I? There was a shuffling of huge oversized feet and a general muttering. Carrot cupped his hand to his ear. I couldn't quite hear, he said. There was a louder mutter, a sort of toccata scored for 100 reluctant voices on the theme of, yes, Corporal Carrot. Right, now off you go, and let's have no more of this nonsense. There's good chaps. Carrot brushed the dust off his hands and smiled at everyone. The trolls looked puzzled. In theory, Carrot was a thin film of grease on the street, but somehow it just didn't seem to be happening. Angua said, he just called 100 trolls good chaps. Some of them are just down off the mountains. Some of them have got lichen on them. Smartest thing on a troll, said Sergeant Cullen. And then the world exploded. The watch had left before Captain Vimes got back to Sudapo's yard. He plodded up the stairs to his office and sat down in the sticky leather chair. He gazed blankly at the wall. He wanted to leave the guard. Of course he did. It wasn't what you could call a way of life. Not life. Unsocial hours, never being certain from one day to the next what the law actually was. In this pragmatic city. No home life to speak of. Bad food, eaten when you could. He'd even eaten some of Cut Me On Throat Dibbler's sausages in a bun before now. It always seemed to be raining or baking hot. No friends, except for the rest of the squad, because they were the only people who lived in your world. Whereas in a few days he would, as Sergeant Cullen had said, be on the gravy boat. Nothing to do all day but eat his meals and ride around on a big horse shouting orders at people. At times like this, the image of old Sergeant Keppel floated across his memory. He'd been head of the watch when Vimes was a recruit, and soon afterwards he retired. They'd all clubbed together and bought him a cheap watch, one of those that'd keep going for a few years until the demon inside it evaporated.
Bloody stupid idea, Bimes thought, moodily, staring at the wall. Bloke leaves work, hands in his badge, an hourglass and bell, and what did we get him? A watch. But he'd still come into work the next day with his new watch to show everyone the ropes. He said, to tidy up a few loose ends, ha ha. See, you youngsters don't get into trouble, ha ha. A month later, he was bringing the coal in and sweeping the floor and running errands and helping people write reports. He was still there 5 years later. He was still there 6 years later when one of the watch got in early and found him lying on the floor. And it emerged that no one knew where he lived. Or even if there was a Mrs. Keppel. They had a whip around to bury him, Vimes remembered. There were just guards at the funeral. Come to think of it, there are always just guards at a guard's funeral. Of course, it wasn't like that now. Sergeant Cullen had been happily married for years. Perhaps because he and his wife arranged their working lives so they only met occasionally, normally on the doorstep. But she left him decent meals in the oven, and there was clearly something there. They got grandchildren, even so obviously there have been times when they'd been unable to avoid each other. Young Carrot had to fight young women off with a stick. And Corporal Knobs, well, he probably made his own arrangements. He was said to have the body of a 25-year-old, although no one knew where he kept it. The point was that everyone else had someone, even if in Nobby's case it was probably against their will. So, Captain Vimes, what is it really? Do you care for her? Don't worry too much about love. That's a dicey word for the over-40s. Or are you just afraid of becoming some old man dying in the groove of his life, and buried out of pity by a bunch of youngsters who never knew you or anyone anything other than some old fart who always seemed to be around the place and got sent out to bring back the coffee and hot figgins and was laughed at behind his back? He'd wanted to avoid that, and now fate was handing him a fairy tale. Of course, he'd known she was rich, but he hadn't expected the summons to Mr. Morcombe's office. Mr. Morcombe had been the Ramkins family solicitor for a long time. Centuries, in fact. He was a vampire. Vimes disliked vampires. Dwarfs were law-abiding little buggers when they were sober. And even trolls were alright if you kept them where you could see them. But all the undead made his neck itch. Live and let live was all very well, but there was a problem right there, when you thought about it logically. Mr. Morcombe was scrawny, like a tortoise, and very pale. It had taken him ages to come to the point, and when it came, the point nailed Vimes in his chest, in his chair. How much? I believe I am right in saying the estate includes the farms, the areas of urban development, and the small area of unreal estate near the university. Are together worth approximately $7 million a year. Yes, $7 million at current valuation, I would say. It's all mine? From the hour of your wedding to Lady Sybil. Although she instructs me in this letter that you are to have access to all her accounts as of the present moment. The pearly dead eyes had watched Vimes carefully. Lady Sybil, he said, owns approximately 1/10 of Ankh, and extensive properties in Moorpark, plus, of course, considerable farmlands, and but we'll own them together. Lady Sybil is very specific. She is deeding all the property to you as her husband, and she has a somewhat old-fashioned approach. He pushed a folded paper across the table. Vimes took it, unfolded it, and stared. Should you predecease her, of course, Mr. Morcombe droned on, will revert to her by common right of marriage, or to any fruit of the union, of course. Vimes hadn't even said anything at that point. He just felt his mouth drop open and small areas of his brain fuse together. Lady Sybil, said the lawyer, the words coming from far away. Well, not as young as she was, is a fine, healthy woman, and there is no reason why Vimes had got through the rest of the interview on automatic. He could hardly think about it now. When he tried, he thought his thoughts kept skidding away, and just as always happened when the world got too much for him, they skidded somewhere else. He pulled open the bottom drawer of his desk and stared at the shiny bottle of Bear Hugger's very fine whiskey. He wasn't sure how it had got there. Somehow, he'd never got around to throwing it out. Start that again, and you won't even see retirement. Stick to cigars. He shut the drawer and leaned back, taking a half-smoked cigar from his pocket. Maybe the guards weren't so good now, anyway. Politics, ha! Watchmen like old Keppel would turn in their graves if they knew what the watch had taken on a what. And the world exploded. The windows blew in, peppering the wall behind Vimes' desk with fragments and cutting on one of his ears. He threw himself to the floor and rolled under the desk. Right, that did it. The alchemists had blown up their guild house for the last time, if Vimes had anything to do with it. But when he peered over the window, he saw across the river the column of dust rising from the Assassin's Guild. The rest of the watch came trotting along Filigree Street as Vimes reached the guild entrance. A couple of black-clad assassins barred his way in a polite manner, which nevertheless indicated that impoliteness was a future option. There were sounds of hurrying feet behind the gates. You see this badge? You see it? Vimes demanded. Nevertheless, this is guild property, said an assassin. Let us in. In the name of the law, bellowed Vimes. The assassin smiled nervously at him. The law is that guild law prevails inside guild walls, he said. Vimes glared at him, but it was true. The laws of the city, such as they were, stopped outside the guild houses. The guilds had their own laws. The guilds own the... He stopped. Behind him, Lance Constable Anqua reached down and picked up a fragment of glass. Then she stirred the debris with her foot. And then her gaze met that of a small, nondescript mongrel dog watching her very intently from under a cart. In fact, nondescript was not what it was. It was very easy to descript. It looked like halitosis with a wet nose. Woof, woof, said the dog in a bored way. Woof, 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 and growl, growl. The dog trotted into the mouth of an alleyway. Angua glanced around and followed it. The rest of the squad were gathered around Vimes, who'd gone very quiet. Fetch me the master of assassins, he said. Now! The young assassin tried to sneer. Ha! Your uniform doesn't scare me, he said. Vimes looked down at his battered breastplate and worn mail. You're right, he said. This is not a scary uniform. I'm sorry. Forward, Corporal Carrot, and Lance Constable Detritus. The assassin was suddenly aware of the sunlight being blocked out. Now these, I think you'll agree, said Vimes, from somewhere behind the eclipse, are scary uniforms. The assassin nodded slowly. He hadn't asked for this. Usually, there were never any guards outside the guild. What would be the point? He had tucked away in his exquisitely tailored black clothes at least 18 devices for killing people. But he was becoming aware that Lance Constable Detritus had one on the end of each of his arms, closer, as it were, to hand. I'll go and get the master, then, shall I? He said. Carrot leaned down. Thank you for your cooperation, he said gravely. Angua watched the dog. The dog watched her. She squatted on her haunches as it sat down and scratched near furiously. Looking around carefully to make sure no one could see them, she barked an inquiry. Don't bother, said the dog. You can talk? Huh? That don't take much intelligence, said the dog. And it don't take much intelligence to spot what you are, neither. Angua looked panicky. Where does it show? It's the smell, girl. Didn't you learn nothing? Smelled you a mile off. I thought, oh ho, what's one of them doing in the watch, eh? Angua waved a finger wildly. If you tell anyone, the dog looked more pained than normal. No one to listen, it said. Why not? Because everyone knows dogs can't talk. They hear me, see. But unless things are really tough, they just think they're thinking to themselves. The little dog sighed. Trust me, I know what I'm talking about. I've read books. Well, chewed books. It scratched near again. Seems to me, it said, we could help each other. In what way? Well, you could put me in the way of a pound of steak. That does wonders for my memory. Steak. Makes it go clean away. Angua frowned. People don't like the word blackmail, she said. It ain't the only word they don't like, said the dog. Take my case. Now, I've got chronic intelligence. Is that any use to a dog? Did I ask for it? Not me. I just finds a cushy spot to spend my nights along in the high-energy magic building at the university. No one told me about all this bloody magic leaking out the whole time. Next thing I know, I open me eyes, head starts fizzing like a dose of salts. Oh, thinks I. Here we go again. Hello, abstract conceptualizing, intellectual development. Here we come. What bloody use is that to me? Last time it happened, I ended up saving the world from horrible wasp names from the dungeon dimensions. And did anyone say thanks? What a good dog. Give him a bone. Har har. It held up a threadbare paw. My name's Gaspode. Something like this happens to me just about every week. Apart from that, I'm just a dog. Angua gave up. She grasped the moth-eaten limb and shook it. My name's Angua. You know what I am. Forgotten it already, said Gaspode. Captain Vimes looked at the debris scattered around the courtyard from a hole in one of the ground floor rooms. All the surrounding windows had broken, and there was a lot of glass underfoot. Mirror glass. Of course, assassins were notoriously vain, but mirrors wouldn't be in rooms, wouldn't they? But mirrors would be in rooms, wouldn't they? You wouldn't expect a lot of glass outside. Glass got blown in, not out. He saw Lance Constable Cuddy bend down and pick up a couple of pulleys attached to a piece of rope, which was burned at one end. There was a rectangle of cards in the debris. The hairs on the back of Vimes's hand prickled. He sniffed rankness in the air. Vimes would be the first to admit that he wasn't a good copper, but he'd probably be spared the chore because lots of other people would happily admit it for him. There was a certain core of stubborn, bloody-mindedness there which upset important people. And anyone who upset important people is automatically not a good copper. But he developed instincts. You couldn't live on the streets of a city like all your life without them. In the same way that the whole jungle subtly changed at the distant approach of the hunter, there was an alteration in the feel of the city. There was something happening here. Something wrong, and he couldn't quite see what it was. He started to reach down. What is the meaning of this? Vimes straightened up. He did not turn around. Sergeant Cullen, I want you to go back to the watch house with Nobby and Detritus, he said. Corporal Carrot and Lance Constable Cuddy, you stay with me. Yes, sir, said Sergeant Cullen, stamping heavily and ripping off a smart salute to annoy the assassins. Vimes acknowledged it. Then he turned around. Ah, Dr. Cruces, he said. The Master of Assassins was white with rage, contrasting nicely with the extreme black of his clothing. No one sent for you, he said. What gives you the right to be here, Mr. Policeman, walking around as if you owned the place? Vimes paused, his heart singing. He savored the moment. He'd like to take this moment and press it carefully in a big book, so that when he was old, he could take it out occasionally and remember it. He reached into his breastplate and pulled out the lawyer's letter. Well, If you'd like the most fundamental reason, he said, it is because I rather think I do. A man can be defined by the things he hates. There were quite a lot of things that Captain Vimes hated. Assassins were near the top of the list, just after kings and the undead. He had to allow, though, that Dr. Cruces recovered very quickly. He didn't explode when he read the letter, or argue, or claim it was a forgery. He simply folded it up, handed it back, and said coldly, "I see. The freehold, at least. Quite so. Could you tell me what has been happening, please?" He was aware of other senior assassins entering the courtyard through the hole in the wall. They were very carefully looking at the debris. Dr. Cruces hesitated for a moment. "Fireworks," he said.
"What happened?" said Gaspode. "Was that someone put a dragon in a box right up against the wall inside the courtyard, right? And then they went and hid behind one of the statues and pulled a string, and next minute, bang!
Bang?
Straight. Then our friend nips into the hole for a few seconds, right? Comes out again, trots around the courtyard, and next minute there's assassins everywhere, and he's among them. What the hell? Another man in black. No one notices, see? You mean he's still in there? How do I know? Hoods and cloaks. Everyone is black. Everyone in black. How come you were able to see this? Oh, I almost always nip into the Assassin's Guild on a Wednesday night. Mixed girl night, see?" Gaspode sighed at Angua's blank expression. "The cook always does a mixed grill on a mixed grill of a Wednesday night. No one ever eats the black pudding, so it's around the kitchens. See, Wolf Wolf, Beg Bag, who's a good boy then? Look at the little bugger. He looks as though he understands every word I'm saying. Let's see what we've got here for a good doggy." He looked embarrassed for a moment. "Pride is all very well, but a sausage is a sausage," he said. "Fireworks?" said Vimes. Dr. Cruces looked like a man grasping a floating log in a choppy sea. "Yes, fireworks. Yes, for Founder's Day. Unfortunately, someone threw away a lighted match which ignited the box." Dr. Cruces suddenly smiled. "My dear Captain Vimes," he said, clapping his hands, "much as I appreciate your concern, I really..." They were stored in that room over there," said Vimes. "Yes, but that's of no account." Vimes crossed to the hole in the wall and peered inside. A couple of assassins glanced at Dr. Cruces and reached nonchalantly toward various areas of their clothing. He shook his head. His caution might have had something to do with the way Carrot put his hand on the hilt of his sword, but it could also have been because assassins did have a certain code, after all. It was dishonorable to kill someone if you weren't being paid. "It seems to be some kind of museum," said Vimes. "Guild memorabilia, that sort of thing." "Yes, exactly. Odds and ends. You know how they mount up over the years." "Oh, well, that all seems in order," said Vimes. "Sorry to have troubled you, Doctor. I will be going. I hope I have not inconvenienced you in any way." "Of course not. Glad to have been able to put your mind at rest." They were ushered gently yet firmly toward the gateway. "I should clean up this glass," said Captain Vimes. Glancing at the debris again. "Someone could hurt themselves. All this glass lying around. Wouldn't like to see one of your people get hurt." "We shall be doing it right this minute, Captain," said Dr. Cruces. "Good, good. Thank you very much." Captain Vimes paused at the doorway, and then thumped the palm of his hand on his forehead. "Sorry, excuse me. Mind like a sieve these days. What was it you said was stolen?" Not a muscle, not a sinew moved on Dr. Cruces's face. "I didn't say anything was stolen, Captain Vimes." Vimes gaped at him for a moment. "Right. Sorry. Of course you didn't. Apologies. Work getting on top of me, I expect. I'll be going, then." The door slammed in his face. "Right," said Vimes. "Captain, why..." Carrot began. Vimes held up a hand. "That wraps it up, then," he said, slightly louder than necessary. "Nothing to worry about. Let's get back to the yard. Where's Lance Constable? What's her name?" Here, Captain, said Angua, stepping out of the alley. Hiding, eh? And what's that? Woof, woof, whine, whine. It's a little dog, Captain. Good grief. The clang of the big corroded inhumation bell echoed through the Assassin's Guild. Black-clad figures came running from all directions, pushing and shoving in their haste to get to the courtyard.
The Guild Council
assembled hurriedly outside Dr. Crucis's office. His deputy, Dr. Downey, knocked tentatively at the door. Come. The council filed in. Dr. Crucis's office was the biggest room in the building. It always seemed wrong to visitors that the Assassin's Guild had such light, airy, well-designed premises. More like the premises of a gentleman's club than a building where death was plotted on a daily basis. Cheery sporting prints lined the walls. Although the quarry was not, when you looked closely, stags or foxes, there were also group etchings, and more recently, newfangled iconographs of the guild. Rows of smiling faces on black-clad bodies, and the youngest members sitting cross-legged in front, one of them making a face. Down one side of the room was the big mahogany table where the elders of the guild sat in weekly session. The other side of the room held Crucis's private library and a small workbench. Above the bench was an apothecary cabinet made up of hundreds of little drawers. The names of the drawer labels were in Assassin's Code, but visitors from outside the guild were generally sufficiently nervous or unnerved not to accept a drink. Four pillars of black granite held up the ceiling. They have been carved with the names of noted assassins from history. Crucis had his desk four square between them. He was standing behind it, his expression almost as wooden as the desk. I want roll call, he snapped. Has anyone left the guild? No, sir. How can you be so sure? The guards on the roofs in Filigree Street say no one came out or went in. Came in or went out, sir. And who's watching them? They're watching one another, sir. Very well. Listen carefully. I want the mess cleaned up. If anyone needs to go outside the building, I want everyone watched. And then the guild is going to be searched from top to bottom. Do you understand? What for, doctor? Said a junior lecturer in poisons. For anything that is hidden. If you find anything and you don't know what it is, send for a council member immediately, and don't touch it. But, doctor, all sorts of things are hidden. This will be different. Do you understand? No, sir. Good. And no one is to speak to the wretched watch about this. You, boy, bring me my hat. Dr. Crucis sighed. I suppose I shall have to go and tell the patrician. Hard luck, sir. The captain didn't say anything until they were crossing the brass bridge. Now then, Corporal Carey, he said. You know how I've always told you how observation is important? Yes, Captain, I have always paid careful attention to your remarks on the subject. So what did you observe? Someone had smashed a mirror. Everyone knows assassins like mirrors, but if it was a museum, why was there a mirror there? Please, sir? Please, sir? Who said that? Down here, sir. Lance Constable Cuddy. Oh, yes. Yes? I know a bit about fireworks, sir. There's a smell that you get after fireworks. Didn't smell it, sir. Smelled something else. Well, smelled, Cuddy. And there were bits of burned rope and pulleys. I smell dragons, said Vimes. Sure, Captain. Trust me, Vimes grimaced. If you spent any time in Lady Ramkin's company, you soon found out what dragons smelled like. If something put its head in your lap while you were dining, you said nothing. You just kept passing it tidbits and hoped like hell it didn't hiccup. There was a glass case in that room, he said. It was smashed open. Huh, something was stolen. There was a bit of card in the dust, but someone must have pinched it while old Crucis was talking to me. I'd give $100 to know what it said. Why, Captain, said Corporal Carrot, because that bastard Crucis doesn't want me to know. I know what could have blown the hole open, said Angua. What? An exploding dragon. They walked in stunned silence. That could do it, said Carrot loyally. The little devils go banged at the drop of a helmet, dragon muttered Vimes. What makes you think it was a dragon, Lance Constable Angua? Angua hesitated, because a dog told me. Was not, she judged, a career-advancing thing to say at that point. At this point. Woman's intuition, she suggested. I suppose, said Vimes. You wouldn't hazard an intuitive guess as to what was stolen. Angua shrugged. Carrot noticed how uninterestingly her chest moved. Something the assassins want to keep where they could look at it, she said. Oh, yes, said Vimes. I suppose next you'll tell me this dog saw it all. Woof? Edward de Eth drew the curtains, bolted the door, and leaned on it. It had been so easy. He put the bundle on the table. It was thin and about 4 feet long. He unwrapped it carefully, and there it was. It looked pretty much like the drawing, typical of the man, a whole page full of meticulous drawings of crossbows, and this in the margins, as though it hardly mattered. It was so simple. Why hide it away? Probably because people were afraid. People were always afraid of power. It made them nervous. Edward picked it up, cradled it for a while, found it seemed to fit his arm and shoulder very snugly. You're mine. And that, more or less, was the end of Edward de Eth. Something continued after a while, but what it was and how it thought wasn't entirely human. It was nearly noon. Sergeant Cullen had taken the new recruits down to the archery butts in Butts Treat. Vimes went on patrol with Carrot. He felt something inside him bubbling over. Something was brushing the tips of his corroded but nevertheless, still active instincts, trying to draw attention to itself. He had to be on the move. It was all the Carrick could do to keep up. There were trainee assassins in the streets around the guild, still sweeping up debris. Assassins in daylight, snarled Vimes. I'm amazed they don't turn to dust. That's vampires, sir, said Carrick. Huh, you're right. Assassins and licensed thieves and bloody vampires. You know, this was a great old city once, lad. Unconsciously, they fell into step, proceeding. When we had kings, sir? Kings? Kings? Hell no. A couple of assassins looked around in surprise. I'll tell you, said Vimes. A monarch's an absolute ruler, right? The head honcho. Unless he's a queen, said Carrot. Vimes glared at him and then nodded. Or the head honcho. No, that'd only apply if she was a young woman. Queens tend to be older. She'd have to be a honcharina? No, that's for very young princesses. No, a honchessa, I think. Vimes paused. There's something in the air in this city, he thought. If the creator had said, let there be light, and on Kmorpork, he'd have got no further because of all the people saying, what color? The supreme ruler, okay? He said, starting to stroll forward again. Okay. But that's not right, see? One man with the power of life and death. But if he's a good man, Carrot began. What? What? Okay. Let's believe he's a good man. But his second in command, is he a good man too? You better hope so, because he's the supreme ruler too, and the name of the king and the rest of the court. They've got to be good men, because if just one of them's a bad man, the result is bribery and patronage. The patrician's a supreme ruler, Carrot pointed out. He nodded at a passing troll. Good day, Mr. Carbuncle. But he doesn't wear a crown or sit on a throne, and he doesn't tell you it's right that he should rule, said Vimes. I hate the bastard, but he's honest, like a corkscrew. Even so, a good man as king. Yes? And then what? Royalty pollutes people's minds, boy. Honest men start bowing and bobbing just because someone's granddad was a bigger murdering bastard than theirs was. Listen.
We probably had good kings once, but kings breed other kings, and blood tells, and you end up with a bunch of arrogant, murdering bastards, chopping off queens' heads and fighting their cousins every 5 minutes. And we had centuries of that. And then one day a man said, "No more kings," and we rose up, and we fought the bloody nobles, and we dragged the king off his throne, and we dragged him into Seder Square, and we chopped his bloody head off. Job well done. "Wow," said Carrot. "Who was he?" "Who?" "The man who said, 'No more kings.'" Vimes, people were staring. Vimes' face went from the red of anger to the red of embarrassment. There was a little difference in the shading, however. "Oh, he was the commander of the city guard in those days," he mumbled. "They called him Old Stoneface." "Never heard of him," said Carrot. "He doesn't appear much in the history books," said Vimes. "Sometimes there has to be a civil war, and sometimes afterwards it's best to pretend something didn't happen. Sometimes people have to do a job, and then they have to be forgotten." "He wielded the axe, you know. No one else would do it. It was a king's neck, after all. Kings are," he spat the word, "special. Even after they'd seen the private rooms and cleaned up the bits, even then, no one had cleaned up the world. But he took the axe and cursed them all and did it." "What king was it?" said Carrot. "Lorenzo the Kind," said Vimes distantly. "I've seen his picture in the Palace Museum," said Carrot. "A fat old man, surrounded by lots of children." "Oh yes," said Vimes carefully. "He was very fond of children." Carrot waved out a couple of dwarfs. "I didn't know this," he said. "I thought there was just some wicked rebellion or something." Vimes shrugged. "It's in the history books, if you know where to look. And that was the end of the kings of Ankh-Morpork. Oh, there was a surviving son, I think, and a few mad relatives. They were banished. That's supposed to be a terrible fate for royalty. I can't see it myself." "I think I can, and you like the city, sir." "Well, yes, but if it was a choice between banishment and having my head chopped off, just help me down with this suitcase. No, we're well rid of kings, but, I mean, the city used to work." "Still does," said Carrot. "They passed the Assassin's Guild and drew level with the high, forbidding walls of the Fool's Guild, which occupied the other corner of the block. No, it just keeps going. I mean, look up there. Carrot obediently raised his gaze. There was a familiar building on the junction of Broadway and Alchemists. The facade was ornate, but covered in grime. Gargoyles had colonized it. The corroded motto over the portico said, 'Neither rain nor snow nor glom of nit can stay these messengers about their duty.' And in more spacious days, that may have been the case. But recently, someone had found it necessary to nail up an addendum which read, 'Don't ask us about rocks, trolls with sticks, all sorts of dragons, Mrs. Cake, huge green things with teeth, any kind of black dogs with orange eyebrows, reins of spaniels, fog, Mrs. Cake.' 'Oh,' he said. 'The Royal Mail.' 'The post office,' corrected Vimes. 'My granddad said that once you could post a letter there and be delivered within a month, without fail. You didn't have to give it to a passing dwarf and hope the little bugger wouldn't eat it before.'" His voice trailed off. "Oh, sorry. No offense meant." "None taken," said Carrot cheerfully. "It's not that I've got anything against dwarfs. I've always said you'd have to look very hard before you'd find a better bunch of highly skilled, law-abiding, hard-working little buggers?" "Yes." "No," they proceeded. "That Mrs. Cake," said Carrot. "Definitely a strong-minded woman, eh?" "Too true," said Vimes. Something crunched under Carrot's enormous sandal. "More glass," he said. It went a long way, didn't it? "Exploding dragons. What an imagination the girl has." "Woof, woof," said a voice behind them. "That damn dog's been following us," said Vimes. "It's barking at something on the wall," said Carrot. Espote eyed them coldly. "Woof, woof, bloody wine, wine," he said. "Are you bloody blind or what?" It was true that normal people couldn't hear Espote speak, because dogs don't speak. It's a well-known fact. It's well-known at the organic level, like a lot of other well-known facts which overrule the observations of the senses. This is because if people went around noticing everything that was going on all the time, no one would ever get anything done. Besides, almost all dogs don't talk. Ones that do are merely a statistical error and can therefore be ignored. However, Gaspoda had found he did tend to get hurt on a subconscious level. Only the previous day, someone had absentmindedly kicked him into the gutter and had gone a few steps before they suddenly thought, "I'm a bastard, what am I?" "There is something up there," said Carrot. "Look, something blue, hanging off that gargoyle." "Woof, woof, 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 would you credit it?" Vimes stood at Carrot's shoulders and walked his hand up the wall, but the little blue strip was still out of reach. The gargoyle rolled a stony eye toward him. "Do you mind?" said Vimes. "It's hanging on your ear." With a grinding of stone on stone, the gargoyle reached up a hand and unhooked the intrusive material. "Thank you. Don't intend it. Vimes climbed down again. "You like gargoyles, don't you, Captain?" said Carrot, as they strolled away. "Yep. They may only be a kind of troll, but they keep themselves to themselves and seldom go below the first floor and don't commit crimes anyone ever finds out about. My type of people." He unfolded the strip. It was a collar, or at least what remained of a collar. It was burnt at both ends. The word chubby was readable through the soot. "The devil," said Vimes. "They did blow up a dragon."